Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. Hello, my name is Demetrius. This is Jason.
Hey, everyone.
And you are listening to Spaces Podcast Express. Thank you for coming back, everybody. Jason, we have a guest today. I met our guest, I want to say almost a year ago now. I got connected through a project from a friend of mine. And we've been working on a couple things together since. So he started a development company that's in the retail sector, fairly locally, but have done some stuff across the nation. And they have a unique approach to development. So I wanted to bring him on to talk a little bit about his company and the approach that they take, because I think it's really cool. And I really hope this sort of ideology spreads. So, please help me welcome Leandro Tyberg. Leandro, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Demetrius and Jason. Thank you both for having me on today.
Thank you so much for joining us. Leandro, so your company is Prime Store.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit quickly about Prime Store and sort of how you guys, a quick snapshot of how you guys approach development?
Yeah. So, you know, we're a bit of a different kind of an animal. We're what I call a developer with a very small D. We're basically a community focused, community centric development company facilitator working on neighborhoods that quite frankly, other people see as underserved or low-income communities and have really suffered from disinvestment and, you know, racism and issues that, quite frankly, we feel really strongly about. And so what we basically try to do at our company is act as a bridge, a facilitator between the capital markets, the tenant community, the electeds, and then local stakeholders, and then try to kind of weave a fabric of a project that understands the community's best interest by asking the community what they actually want, and not the opposite, not walking into a community and saying, here's what you're going to get, and here are the type of tenants that you deserve. It's really the opposite, where we walk in with a blank slate. A lot of patience is needed. These projects take very, very, very hard work and a very long time. The project, Demetrius, that you've been helping me with, in Watts in Southern California, this will be our 13th year working on the project. And we still have not only another 5 years to go, but you know, we don't sell our projects. So they're basically like lifelong commitments to communities. And that approach obviously is very different than what the development community, you know, writ large has been known for, where, you know, most of the models have been what they call merchant developers, where they come in, put in a couple of tenants, sell, extract value, get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
And our concept is literally the opposite. It's extremely like personal, you know, like everybody that we work with, including you, the type of people that we want working on our projects understand that we're doing something more than just a development. There's something much, much deeper about, you know, the needs that our community has, and then the feeling that you get when you're trying to address those needs.
Yeah,
is a very powerful experience.
Yeah, and one of the things that I love about the way that you guys approach it, and it's not like you know, like you mentioned it, kind of coming in and just throwing something in and getting out. You guys take a really thoughtful approach, even to the, like, to the design level. It's not just some stucco box that just goes in just to have a building and then they're out of there. You guys have like really high quality design, like contemporary or whatever the aesthetic is, but it's like very intentional and well developed design.
Yeah, but you're just saying that because you're one of the designers.
Good point. Really good point.
Well, the one that I'm doing is interior work on the exterior of the entire complex.
Wait. Like the insides don't matter? Is that what you're saying?
No, so I don't have a bias for the exterior. I think
you're right. Look, each of our projects, they need to be reflections of how people feel. And they need to be reflections of the identity of the community. We don't always know what that is. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you have to walk in really, really with an open heart and open mind. Mm-hmm. And spend the years of time, you know, meeting with community groups, understanding programming, understanding the intent, and then really trying to find what is that specialness that people want to see reflected in projects in their community. So yeah, as you go through the projects that we've done, they really all do look different. In some communities, we may end up doing a, you know, Legoreta Barragan style modern design, mm-hmm. because the community wants to push towards that. In another community, we've, you know, been faced with, they want to do a California classic missions design because they perceive that as historical and valuable. Over the last couple of years, people have moved away from those traditional architectural concepts and said, we want to do something just unique, super contemporary, super special. And as we chatted about the project that you've been helping with in Watts, this is the redevelopment of the Jordan Downs public housing project. And in that project, we wanted to take and select materials that had a kind of a depth to them, which is a mirror of the depth of the community. So, for example, we went with a very contemporary Mediterranean concept with a Core 10 steel cladding that would literally rust and change over time.
Super cool.
So when we first installed the Core 10 cladding over all of the facades, everyone was like, they're literally silver. How could you put a silver building here? And we're like, no, just wait. It'll change. It'll rust. And of course, we designed for it. So we created special drip edges and landscaping planners. So as the years wore on and the Core 10 changed, it wasn't, of course, staining the landscaping and hardscaping. And what I love about it is you go there now and it's basically achieved this woodsy red, crimson natural hue that every time I visit the center, it's a little different. And it's the way we call it, it's almost like maturing. Mm-hmm. And that's how we feel about the community that we've, you know, really come to fall in love with in Watts, where Watts has got so much history, so much historical knowledge trapped there, mm-hmm. that by creating materials that offer maturity, that offer this reflection of change and not stagnant material concepts where it's like, this is what it's going to be forever. Mm-hmm. For us was really meaningful. And the more we worked with the community and the more they understood the material selection, they love that their project literally is like a living, breathing animal that constantly changes.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a unique function of what we call Freedom Plaza in Watts. And again, every one of our centers is different. The one thing that is definitely common in all of them is, you know, we're allergic to fences. And it's the opposite of what we call fortress architecture, mm-hmm. where you're really trying to keep people away or keep a barrier between the public and the private. We literally want to break that apart and like color so outside the lines that you don't really know what's public and private. You don't really know where the sidewalk, you know, meets the private property. It's just kind of a blend.
Yeah. And then the community takes ownership of it in that sense.
Yeah, that's the overall most important component. So not only are projects programmed by the community, our projects are named by the community. They help us select the tenant mix. They educate us on the merchandising plan. And then most importantly, they're ultimately built by the community. So we have a very, very strong passion for local hire on all of our projects, whether it's required by government agencies or not. On this project, for example, the Housing Authority, which was effectively our landlord, because it is public housing projects, they mandated a 30% local hire requirement, and we ended up achieving 78%. Wow. Which after 28 years of doing this was literally the best we've ever done, which makes me like so happy. I mean, we've had opportunities to work in communities from the far south side of Chicago to Arizona, Texas, Nevada, and of course, you know, home is Southern California, but we've never hit 78% before. So I mean, for me, that metric is literally the most valuable metric of the whole project. Yeah, we got great tenants and it's amazing, but wow, it was built by, you know, local community leaders.
Yeah.
That is very powerful. And when the community is involved with all aspects of the project, you'll find that they think of the project as theirs, which is exactly what we want. Mm-hmm. So the reason we don't have to worry about fences and fortress architecture is because the community effectively takes care of it.
I'm super curious when you're talking about all the different involvement from the community and talking about naming and all these other kind of, like, there's got to be a highly organized process you guys go through for welcoming all this feedback, because a lot of us, including myself, get super concerned about or super leery of getting a ton of opinions from so many different areas because it becomes, you know, kind of a mess. So I'm curious how you guys go about organizing that and handling that.
So we do all of our community outreach in-house, and our community outreach marketing branding department is literally larger than the development department. So we literally put a focus on that more than we do other aspects of just the nuts and bolts of putting things together. And, you know, for us, again, that's the part that we find literally most meaningful. As far as collecting all the data, you know, we're doing a new project with Metro and the county called the Vermont Manchester Transit Priority Project. And we're still in the early stages, but one of the first things we did before we literally have like done the plans is we created a community advisory council of 26 people. And the CAC, as we call it, which is made up of community representatives, both from churches, nonprofits, local businesses, even some law enforcement, the council office, supervisor's office. We're getting all of this feedback up front, and then we create a repository of all this information. And, you know, and the trick is not filtering the repository. It's kind of like getting a Facebook post that you don't like. You got to keep it up there. you got to be authentic, like, yeah, they're blemishes and all. And the repository acts as this almost this like memory well of this is all the things that we've heard. And trust me, there are things that we hear where they're not always complimentary. And that's natural, right? This is not easy. And it's very tangible. This is changing people's lives and their communities. So of course it's going to have an impact. Here's what I could tell you also, Jason, though. And I think this for me has been something that is very personal, and I'm going to be very blunt with you. It's a little bit of the secret sauce. So I probably, you know, whatever you do, don't put this on the airwaves. But the approach that we have with community outreach is we are a part of the community, and therefore any opinion that is stated is not against us. It's against all of the issues that we're trying to ameliorate.
Sure.
And so when they say, we don't want development in our neighborhood, we don't want this in our neighborhood, we want this, we want, our whole approach is damn right. That's exactly right. Like, so, you know, for me, it never feels like they're attacking the project. Hmm. They're attacking the issues that we need to be mindful of. so that we can make sure to, you know, not fall into that trap or that pitfall.
Right. Free information, basically.
It's free information and it's all valuable.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to walk in to a neighborhood and say, hey, we think you deserve a McDonald's, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because then you're walking in with a preconceived notion of
what's best
for them. What, yep. Not only what's best for them, but I'm doing this project for the financial gain for me,
yep.
As opposed to I'm doing this project for the financial gain of everybody. And the better that the city and the county do as my partner, the better that the community does as my partner, then the better we will do. Because again, sure. Since we're not selling, you know, our performers aren't necessarily based with a pure, you know, this is the perfect threshold. And if we don't meet that hurdle, we ain't doing it.
Hmm.
It's a little bit more blended than that. There's intangibles that we calculate within our decision-making process that, you know, that add value to it.
Leandro, you mentioned that you guys hang on to the properties and you do property management after completing the project.
Right.
Do you end up seeing your the big payoff on the property management side in comparison to, because you're not solely looking at just a hard line if the project pencils or not, if you're going to make money on it, is that where the property management side sort of picks up any areas that fall short in the development of it?
So it's a challenging question because we are not doing the development project to then yield a revenue on the property management. We consider that a bonus and ancillary. In our company, about 50% of the revenue is from the property management side, and about the other 45% is development, and the other 5% is usually acquisitions and leasing.
Okay.
So it's a pretty fair blend. The reason we love doing property management is, one, it lets us stay completely connected with the communities that we're serving. Okay. And we're able to then select vendors, whether it's landscaping, security, preventative maintenance, that are from the community. Mm-hmm. And that way it keeps that kind of fabric intact.
Got it.
Also, the property management side of the business keeps us completely connected with the tenants. So understanding tenant sales, understanding what works for them, understanding their concerns and their operational costs makes us better developers. Makes us more aware of everyone's issues. Now, after, you know, 28 years, our Rolodex of, my God, do people still have Rolodexes?
I'm sure a few do.
Someone.
Yeah, I do. My God, our tenant contact list is really, really strong, and you know, we've had the blessing of working with a lot of you know, most tenants in America. So we were able to track the sales in our other projects, and they. You know, when they're getting a call from Prime Store, they're usually aware that, oh, our centers in their inner city neighborhoods do better sales per square foot than affluent, mm-hmm. you know, west side neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. You know, in the communities that we're serving, the truth of the matter is that people spend their money on essentials, mm-hmm. and they spend their money on things that they perceive as having a value. So clearly we're not doing luxury stores. You know, we're providing stores that the community needs. And from a competitive advantage, there's not a lot around us. You know, we're usually putting in projects that are in food deserts, that are in, you know, historically, you know, underplanned communities where, you know, the previous zoning was just strip center zoning and a lot of contamination, a lot of, you know, brownfield cleanup in the projects that we do. But that also gives us a competitive advantage too, because when we create a large project and you zoom out on Google Earth, you're just seeing rooftops all around us, just lots and lots of homes,
yeah.
Which, you know, is a great blocker for people trying to put a project right next to you. Yeah. And of course the tenants know that. So they're more willing to participate in a Prime Store project because of those, you know, parameters that they're used to.
Yeah. And then one thing I wanted to mention, like, so years ago, there was just no chance of getting big name company stores, retail stores to come into places like Compton, LA, certain areas of LA, Watts.
Totally.
And then Magic Johnson on a you know, high profile level came in and was like, Starbucks, come in, follow me. And it completely shifted the paradigm on a larger scale. One, did you guys kind of catch into that tailwind and see a change in how effective you guys were able to deliver those projects with that change in mindset? And then two, I wanted to highlight how you guys, particularly at Freedom Plaza, were able to get some of these, like the Habit Burger and Nike and a couple other places into that. But can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. First, I'll be very clear. I have a mad amount of respect for Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, he really was talking about things that we were talking about at the right time. Mm-hmm. Of course, his platform is significantly taller than mine because I'm only like 5'5".
A little bit.
And I don't play any sports at all. So,
but it looks like you do play guitar.
I play guitar, but there no sports. Yeah, exactly. Rock, baby, but I can't dribble for crap. And so, you know, Magic was educating people about the power of inner cities at the time that we were also doing that. But his platform was just so, so much bigger. We were working with Magic on a lot of his coffee shops. He was effectively our tenant through what they called urban coffee opportunities. We certainly could not have done it without him, right? We're not operators of coffee shops. We're not operators of tenant stores. We're developers. And so he was just so forward thinking in having the courage and intelligence to enter some of our projects as our tenant. It's something that we'll always be very grateful for. You know, our first project as a company was the summer after the riots of 1992. That's literally when I dropped out of college. And my dad and my brother-in-law, Arturo, who's my partner today at Prime Store, called me and said, hey, everything's on fire. And we've got this property in South LA that we don't know what to do with. And, you know, maybe we can figure out what to do. Arturo and I kind of rolled up our sleeves and said, okay, well, what can we do in this abandoned, burned out piece of property at the southwest corner of Southwestern and 68th Street, 60-01 Southwestern. And Arturo is such an incredible businessman. He was able to get a lease with the LA County Office of Education to start a Head Start program for kids. And he said, Leandro, can you build it? And, you know, both of us didn't really know what we were doing at all. And, you know, we spent that summer figuring out how to build this 4,000 square foot CMU building. And, you know, by the time, you know, the summer was over, we turned around and looked at this thing and almost just started crying, where it was like, wow, we did this. And it was an incredible education working in South LA, you know, the summer after the riots. Cause for those of us who lived through that, the air felt so scary mm-hmm. after the riots. It was like everybody was driving three car lengths apart because you never knew if you were going to get jacked. Everybody had their windows up. Nobody would look left or right. You just like drove down the streets staring forward and you just never knew when something would ignite. You know, it felt like a powder keg, and it was scary and painful. You could feel it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of remember turning around one day and saying, well, am I going to, you know, go back to college? Am I going to be a poet? Am I going to play guitar? And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. I just want to like develop properties that are different and meaningful and have an impact. And look, I'll be, you know, Demetrius, you and I are friends, and you know my story a little bit, that like all of us, there's trauma and there's pain. And not all of us have the tools to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And not all of us made a lot of great choices in youth. Mm. and I certainly Amen. Didn't. Yeah. So, you know, I didn't harness the pain of my life well. And I was and always am, you know, a pretty sensitive person. And Also, you know, I moved to America when I was 5 to Los Angeles, and pretty traumatic kind of upbringing. So in our own humble way, I found that the more we were dedicated to working on properties that needed healing, mm-hmm. the more, in a very selfish way, I found it was kind of healing me, you know, and healing the people working on it. And that we were talking in a kind of intentional way that people weren't used to. And so, you know, that's where it began. And thank God that Magic then used his platform and bullhorn to really, like, you know, ring the bell and champion the cause. You know, we'll be forever grateful for that.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, the last question you posed about the tenants that we bring, the tenants that we're trying to bring to our neighborhoods, we want to be having the same conversation that we're having at the office about racial equity, about non-extractive economics. And we want them to be having that conversation where they're looking at the community as a partner. And that's why there are certain tenants that, you know, will just never be a part of our shopping centers, or, you know, P3 projects, and that's fine. But we're trying to, you know, our whole company philosophy is to be a facilitator and educator throughout the whole way. And that includes the tenants. And so with our new project in Watts, we're very happy to have the, what's called the Starbucks Community Store. It is a very different concept than the traditional Starbucks concepts. There's actually a community room dedicated to the community where they train baristas and people who want to grow in the Starbucks Corporation, help them with a lot of kind of skills and training one step beyond just a regular store. There's local artists and muralists that were hired to decorate the store, help design it. We also have the Nike Community Store, where a portion of the profits go back into the local wellness programs of the community. As you mentioned, you know, we love the Habit. It is a food desert in Watts, so we put in a Smart and Final Express Grocer, which has, you know, wonderful, healthy, fresh food, raw stress for less. And then we have to also, you know, recognize that you've been a champion in helping us with some of our local entrepreneurs that need some help with design. So, you know, Jason, we hired Demetrius's company to be our designer and architect for this incredible concept called Southern Girl Desserts, which is founded by these two incredibly wonderful African-American business ladies who won Cupcake Wars and are just angels when it comes to caring about their community. And the quality of what they put out is just ridiculous. It's just so delicious and, you know, incredible fan favorites. We had worked with them on their first location in Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza, I think about 8 years ago. And we're so happy to bring them now to Watts. Demetrius is designing their store, and it's a unique store. It's got a bit of a commissary and an area where people can, where they'll be able to do a little bit of training and teach people from the community, you know, baking techniques. Demetrius is also helping us with a concept called the Think Watts Foundation, which is a mutual friend named Styx, who's the one who introduced us. Mm-hmm. And Styx provides these incredible programs for kids with wellness, life skills, training, financial literacy. He's having just an incredibly meaningful impact. And that's just, you know, we can't do that without you, Demetrius. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the pat on the back. We're up against it today, but we clearly have so much more
longer episode.
Yeah, we clearly have so much more to talk with you about. So we'll get you back on here in our next season, and then probably do a full hour and focus in maybe on one of the projects that you're working on at the time.
It's been a pleasure. I'm glad I didn't come off like a total dumbass. And, you know, I love what you guys are doing here.
Thank you so much, Leandro. Thank you for listening. Jason, thanks for hanging out. Again, we have the episode that came out last week, the long form episode that came out last week, which is the Eiffel Tower. So don't forget to check that out. Other than that, We will talk again on Tuesday. Thanks. Thank you again to Leandro. To find out more about Prime Store, you can check out their website, primestore.com. That's PRIMESTOR.com. And you can follow them on social media. Twitter is at Prime Store, and on Instagram at Prime Store Development. This show is part of the Gable Media Network. You can check out similar content at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. You can help support what we're doing here by leaving a 5-star rating and a review on your preferred podcasting app. It helps others find us, and your support is the only way that this show grows. And don't forget to connect with us through our Facebook community, Instagram, and see the random thoughts and articles that we share on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you again for spending some time with us. Talk soon.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually, and putting it in launch position, is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk, and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.